News Talk AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Welcome back to your Friday edition. Hour two of your Friday edition is officially underway. And that means we have a roundtable that has made their way into studio. We welcome to the program lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien.
Good to be back.
Another lawyer from Powerline, a good friend, Scott Johnson.
Used to be lawyer extraordinaire.
Used to be lawyer, yeah. Formerly lawyer extraordinaire. You've passed that mantle on to our friend Jeff.
Got a lot to dive into this hour. I thought we'd start off with what should be something light when you're talking about Sesame Street and Big Bird, but unfortunately it's not. From the AP, Smokey the Bear taught kids the importance of preventing wildfires. Remember growing up with Smokey the Bear living in Southern California?
Only you can prevent forest fires.
McGruff the Crime Dog warned not to talk to strangers. In 1972, Big Bird lined up on Sesame Street to receive a measles vaccine as part of a campaign to get more youngsters inoculated against the disease. But when that same iconic 8-foot-tall children's character tweeted last week that he'd been vaccinated against COVID-19, conservative politicians immediately pushed back.
Just conservative politicians, nobody else.
Senator Ted Cruz, a Republican, grilled Big Bird for what he called government propaganda. Fox News contributor Lisa Booth had described it as brainwashing children and twisted. What did Big Bird tweet out? Well, he tweeted out, "My wing is feeling a little sore, but it'll give my body an extra protective boost that keeps me and others healthy."
This is, this is not entirely accurate and honest, because it wasn't just the tweet that I think people were outraged. Not outraged, probably isn't the best word. It wasn't just the tweet that prompted a backlash. It was the town hall that CNN did with the characters from Sesame Street. I watched some of it. It was creepy and it was weird, and it did feel like government propaganda.
Yeah.
What Big Bird is doing is a long tradition. It's part of a long tradition, but what's different now, of course, is that everything is political and everything is contentious, said Thomas Dougherty, an American studies professor at Brandeis University. Something that we all wanted a year ago, the vaccine, is now a matter of great contention. They go in to sort of cite different controversies that have that have taken place on TV throughout the years, you know. And it's unfortunate, because as we've talked about and we continue to talk about, and we'll get into it here more when we get into Governor Tim Walz and his desire to pump up the COVID numbers. But it has been politicized. Mm-hmm. The vaccine has been politicized. COVID has been politicized. I don't know if Sesame Street should avoid this altogether because of the fact that it's been politicized. I think it's an easy assumption to make that if the politicization of COVID was reversed, right? So let's say Trump was in office and you had the left that was out there saying, "My body, my choice," you know, to take the vaccine and all that. I don't think we would have Big Bird and Sesame Street going and pushing the vaccine if that was going the other direction.
I don't think so for a second. But you also wouldn't have the issue of force being used, because that's where the politicization of the vaccine is really coming down to. It's coming down to, there are people out there that, for whatever reason, do not want to take the vaccine, whether it's a good reason or a bad reason. You have people out there that do not want to take the vaccine, and then you have a lot of people out there that want to force those people to take the vaccine. That's the real crux of the issue.
I missed this controversy. I rely on you guys to bring me the news from CNN. But, I take it that if they've got Sesame Street characters involved, the point is to persuade kids to be vaccinated. Correct. or to persuade parents to have their kids vaccinated, or to persuade kids to nag their parents to have them vaccinated. And that raises a whole different issue, a whole different cost-benefit analysis than the one that applies to consenting adults. Yeah. And it seems to me that really is troubling. And, you know, it really is a kind of propaganda that should have nothing to do with the parents' decision-making process on this.
You are 100% correct. That type of messaging should be aimed at parents, not kids.
Right.
And when you bring in Elmo and Big Bird and you do make it basically an episode of Sesame Street, you are clearly targeting kids. And you know what? When you have parents out there that do not want their kids to get the vaccine, and they have that right to not want their kids to get the vaccine, that's going to piss them off.
Well, and you've talked about this on the show before, guys, that this is the same MO that they use on climate change. you know, scare the hell out of kids.
Yeah.
Right? Start with the kids, scare the hell out of the kids.
You're not going to have a planet to live on in 5 years.
Exactly. Exactly. And so then, you know, the kids demand action because how are you going to say no to children? Well, children shouldn't be making these decisions.
You know, you guys talked with Kevin Roche earlier this week on where we are in the epidemic. And it seems to me that this whole children's phase is another aspect of the permanent emergency. And when you talk about climate, that's the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's the permanent emergency that is intended to let them take away our freedom. And I, that, to me, is the most troubling aspect of this whole thing. On COVID, it's the permanent emergency. And on climate, it's the permanent emergency.
Yeah, we talked earlier in the week about how they're taking everything they learned from COVID and they're going to start applying it to the climate change argument.
Yeah, that's going to, yeah, that'll
climate
be.
Climate lockdowns.
That'll be the next big push. And it's, you know, and look, it's not. I'm not surprised at the move by Sesame Street. Now, Sesame Street has adopted what are distinctly liberal views on a number of different issues. And it's unfortunate because, and again, it comes back around to that continued topic of social networking, how interconnected we are and how divided everything gets. Your media outlet entities have been quick to adopt things that are specific to the left and ignore things that are right leaning, as opposed to just trying to be middle of the road. And if it's left or right politicized, we're going to go and avoid it altogether. And this has happened, you know, within our news media now, right? It's clear. It happens in our television programming now. It, you know, the left, you know, Jesse Kelly's right when we talked about this. You know, how do we win the culture war? It's like, no, the left has won the culture war. You know, the right is just going to be in a constant battle against it now because the left does own the majority, if not all, of the culture war, apart from those smaller entities that are trying to grow and gain an audience, like Daily Wire, for example, that's going multifaceted in the content that they're making.
Yep. No, the propaganda, you know, infiltrated Sesame Street and other children's programming on PBS a long time ago. You know, this is made with government money. This is a government production. PBS is a government outlet.
Yeah.
You shouldn't really expect anything but sort of approved narrative messaging. It's just it's frustrating when, you know, you have things that should be sort of a safe harbor for your children. You know, if you don't want your children exposed to anything political, right? They don't need to be thinking about that kind of stuff yet. They're little kids. You can't escape it. It's becoming more and more difficult to escape it, to find things for your kids to watch that don't have some sort of narrative or agenda pushing.
Yeah, it's almost like we're not allowed to escape anymore. I mean, it used to be sports. Sports was the escape, as you know, the escape route, and now that's politicized. Everything has become politicized. No, where you look, it's this political messaging, and it's getting off-putting.
When you put this in the context of the media have become an adjunct of the Democratic Party, and the fact that this is, you know, permeated into Sesame Street and CNN and all the rest, it just tells you that this is the message the Democratic Party wants to convey. Can't we go back to the good old days when we learned to read with Fargo North, Decoder?
Well, we just taught, you know, simple decency and just treat everybody with respect. I mean, go back and look at your Sesame Street from the 70s. Go back and look at it from the early 80s. It's not like they weren't teaching the same values, doing nothing with my fingers, and they weren't diverse back then. They absolutely were diverse back then. Sesame Street has always prided itself on that.
Sesame Street was cutting edge in that respect in terms of children's programming when it first came out. It was a very intentional choice by the creators of Sesame Street to put a diverse cast on screen so that every kid watching could have somebody that they could relate to and look like. I mean, that is an intentional choice that was made early on in Sesame Street, which was very unique for TV at that time.
And there was a very wholesome, you know, a sort of societal norm take to it in that treat others as you would want to be treated and going through different circumstances. Don't bully one another and things like that. We all know what's happened. It's all changed now. It is the political correctness. It is the wokeness that has now permeated inside of that now. And you're right, Scott Johnson. It's affected everything. And the part of it that makes me sad is typically, there's a yin and yang effect where it swings so far one way and then it swings back the other way. I, I don't see that happening when it comes to these culture wars.
Well, Jeff made a good point. There's no escape.
No.
You know, there's no escape. And the left wants ownership of everything. They want everything to reflect their values, and they want to make sure that conservatives don't feel welcome, that conservatives understand that this is not your playground, this is not your area anymore, whether it's going to a football game, watching a kids program. All the messaging has to be there. We've seen the pressure that they can apply to like the NFL, to the NBA, to your big sports leagues. We've seen the pressure that they can apply to corporations like Target and Best Buy and other companies. We've all seen the amount of pressure and how quickly these large organizations are show up to bend the knee and do whatever they say because they don't want to get the woke mob mad at them. And the point of that, I think, in at least in a part of it, is to make sure that everybody knows that, you know, this is our realm, this is our area, and if you're going to come in here, you're going to play by our rules, and we're going to make sure that you know that your type, the people that think like you, we don't want you guys here.
The point, to put it another way, is to get you to shut up.
Yeah.
And if you don't shut up, they will kill you.
They will destroy you.
That's just restating the point that you made, though. they want the field
much more succinctly, though. I appreciate that.
651-989-5855 is the phone number. Let's go and talk with Kelly in St. Paul. Good morning, Kelly. Welcome to Justice and Drew here on Twin Cities News Talk. You're also on with Jeff O'Brien and Scott Johnson.
Oh, well, good morning, all. I was listening to what you were saying about Sesame Street and how things have changed. No, I don't believe they have. I think Sesame Street has always been your flannel shirt socialist montage. I mean, it's always been leaning towards the left. And now, because of the COVID and what's going on, it's just come to fruition, I guess. So that's my opinion.
Okay. Thanks,
Kelly.
Perhaps, I mean, without going back and watching.
Which I'm not going to do.
Which I'm not going to do either. I do know
I'm
that
way behind on Succession. I got to get caught up on that.
I don't recall any major controversies when I was growing up as a kid around Sesame Street and what they were going and teaching children at the time. And I guess that's what I'm gauging it off of. And when you want to sort of find a parallel example on the adult side of things, I would take your Sesame Street on one end during 70s, 80s, and your Saturday Night Live on the adult end during 70s and 80s. Take both of those and then compare those shows, any one of those shows, to what we see today on any one of those shows, and I think you will see an absolute stark difference in contrast right. In the way that the comedy is delivered and the children's programming is delivered.
And if that messaging was there, and there's a very good chance that it was, and I was just too young to remember it, I would venture to say that, you know, and I would apply this to both Sesame Street and Saturday Night Live to, you know, use both of your examples, it was 99% entertainment, 1%. You know, sneaky messaging. Now you watch Saturday Night Live, and that's all it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not even, they don't even try to be funny anymore. They don't even try to be entertaining anymore. It's just put on your rose-colored glasses and pretend that Democrats are the best thing since sliced bread.
Well, and one more point on the Sesame Street front. I will say to the caller, he does have a point in that you still did have your alarmism du jour of the day. That was talked about on Sesame Street, you know, whether it was not global warming at the time, but it was ozone layers.
The ice age was coming.
The ice age was coming, you know, make sure you recycle everything, which is fairly benign. I know that was there. The only hope, and I want to try to, before we move over to Governor Tim Walz and all of his lies, I want to make one more point on this. The hope that I have in looking towards the future is that because we're at such an extreme polarization in the country right now, you do have a lot of parents that are talking on the conservative side of things. You have a lot of parents that are having discussions with their children that they normally wouldn't have. You know, when you look at what's happening within our school system, you know, when you look at what's happening within our politics, kids are having to grow up a heck of a lot faster than they ever did before. And I firmly believe there's a lot of amazing parents out there that are having to do more home education to their kids, even if they are going to public schools, about what's happening. And kids are learning a lot more. And I hope that those generations growing up will be the ones to go and permeate into the culture to perhaps provide that balance that is so desperately needed that we just don't have right now.
So I don't know where this is going to go in the years to come, but we may be looking back at 2021 is the year when parents woke up. You know, with these school board meetings and more conservatives running for school boards, and you know, just kind of this pushback. You know, where I am in Wright County, I think every operating levy was voted down. That has to be a product, my belief, in not, it's just not just a dollars and cents thing. That is parents concerned with what's going on in schools. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, but this could be the start of the pushback against some of these agendas being pushed
in
schools.
Sure hope so. Any smart Republican out there that is considering a run for office right now, I mean, you better be listening to these parents. You better be listening to what's happening on school boards, because that is, I mean, I think, one of the things we learned from the last batch of elections, that's a needle mover when it comes to getting the electorate out there. You know, Republicans have a real opportunity to present themselves as the party of parents,
mm-hmm.
and the party of parental choice and school choice, and reasserting parental rights away from all of this socialist, collectivist, garbage, liberal government nonsense.
That's exactly right. Terry McAuliffe didn't misspeak in that debate. That's what he and his party believe.
Yep. Coming up, a whistleblower has leaked an email exchange dating back to October 2020 in which the chief of staff to Governor Tim Walz tells the Department of Health that the department's numbers on how COVID was spreading were less useful than what I expected. These numbers are small. You know, you need to, you know, get creative in your thinking.
Creative.
Twin Cities News Talking.
So, you know what Mike said about getting LASIK at LASIK Plus? That it was the best decision he's ever made.
Oh, yeah.
And Tara, she said from the moment she arrived for her consultation, she got the red carpet treatment. And Kevin, he said that the ride home lasted longer than the actual procedure. And Kendra said...
Oh, we don't know any Kendras.
I'm reading reviews online. LASIK Plus has thousands of five-star reviews.
Thousands?
Uh-huh. Okay, where was I? Oh, so Kendra said...
LASIK Plus has received more five-star reviews online nationally than anyone else. So, if you're ready for a life of new vision, schedule today. Right now at LASIK Plus, we're offering 20% off LASIK with our latest Wavelight laser when treated in November. Visit MyLASIKOffer.com. LASIK Plus, the patient's choice for LASIK. Must mention this promotion and be treated in November of 2021 to qualify. 20% off standard price of Wavelight procedure cannot be combined with any other offers. Go to MyLASIKOffer.com for details.
AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Welcome back to your Friday edition of Justice and Drew. Phone lines are open. 651-989-5855. You want to comment on anything we're discussing? We've got Representative Tom Emmer coming up at about 7:55 this morning. The Friday News Quiz at 8:35. Get your votes in now. If you correctly predict the winner between Scott Johnson, Jeff O'Brien, and our producer Sam, you'll be entered into a drawing for a $100 gift card from Twin Cities Cannabis.
Don't bet on me unless you get odds.
You're already getting bets. That's right. You've got the most picks so far. You are leading Scott Johnson in the selections and the predictions for the news quiz.
People have given up hope on me.
I think I found the clip that I mentioned before. I sent it over to Sam. So hopefully this is the one that I was looking for. But it's with regard to the story here from Powerline. Hey, that's where Scott Johnson's from. This is written by your cohort, John Hinderrocker. Yeah. A whistleblower has leaked an email exchange dating back to October 2020 in which Chief of Staff to Minnesota Governor Tim Walz tells the State Department of Health that the department's numbers on how COVID were spreading were less than useful than I expected because these numbers are small. The commissioner of health said in turn that people look at the primary case numbers and think that those are small impacts that don't justify the dial backs we propose. She urges her staff to engage in creative thinking.
Why can't you just be honest? How come that's never an option?
Okay, this is where we came in with the lockdown regime in March of, was it 2020.
Mm-hmm.
When Walz gave that speech in which he said that if we didn't implement the lockdown, 75,000 Minnesotans would die of COVID-19. If we did, 50,000 would die, and that he was about to save 25,000 lives. The whole thing was a farce cooked up over at the University of Minnesota by students working overtime on a weekend.
Who had no idea. Who had no idea that the administration was going to take their model and run with it. I remember that story when it came out that the modeling that everybody was using was based off these two University of Minnesota students.
And that was another part of Walz's talk that day, was that these weren't national numbers. This was super-duper University of Minnesota study focused on Minnesota, based on Minnesota numbers. The whole thing was a farcical lie, and that's where we came in. Everything since then has been more of the same. This particular email that John posted on our site yesterday was a predicate for the November lockdown. I started following the COVID regime on a daily basis, participating in press conferences after the lockdown. And when I start, I would email questions in. They never took my questions on the conference calls for a couple weeks. And I emailed a few hostile questions. And when they figured out where they were coming from, they cut me off, excluded me from the conference calls, even though they never took my questions, and stopped answering my questions. They had previously given me some information in response. And it turned out, so I filed a Data Practices Act request akin to what Jeff had done in a lawsuit further down the line. This was back in April of 2020. Filed a Data Practices Act request with the Minnesota Department of Health and with the governor's office for emails related to me. And within a few weeks, I did get back a set of emails that had buried within it the last hostile question I submitted to the Minnesota Department of Health that was forwarded to Governor Walz's chief press guy, Teddy Chan, the text of which read, let's talk about this. And from that point on, they excluded me from conference calls, they quit answering my questions, and they wouldn't tell me why. And I hired a lawyer, and we sued them and got a ruling from the judge that said if the allegations of my complaint were true, that they excluded me because of my political views, that was illegal. And that was enough to get them to settle the case within a couple weeks. And
that was what started you coming on the program. The first time we invited you on, I think, was over all of that.
And forgive me for telling the story again. It's the beginning of a beautiful relationship, just like Casablanca.
Well, and there was let me play you this audio clip, too, and I found it from about 5 days ago. Governor Tim Walz was holding a press conference, and he said this.
We hear the statistics that very few children get sick. First and foremost, I dismiss that. You heard it. We have 300 kids in the hospital that are really sick.
That's not true.
No.
According to MDH's own data, 28 kids have been admitted into the hospital each week on average over the past month. It's a flat out lie. It's a flat out lie. And I know what the argument's going to be on the left. They're not going to care. The supporters of Walz aren't going to care because what he's doing is the right thing to do.
It's all in a good cause.
It's all for a good cause. But unfortunately, the ability that he has to be this manipulative, right, it pushes back on the actual truth in science. And if you're going to be that manipulative, how in the world are we ever going to get any kind of clarity or truth to really get our hands around all this? And it cost lives, it cost livelihoods, it cost jobs, because they want to perpetuate their own narrative.
Yep, the most important aspect for any official to have, whether it be an elected official, public health official, whatever, the most important aspect to have during a time like this, during a pandemic, is credibility. And when you lie, you lose credibility. Even if the intention of your lie is noble. And I'm sure that, if you really were able to soul search with some of these people, that's sort of what you would come to. It's like, yeah, it was a lie, but it was just in order, we just want to get people to be safe. We just want them to do the right thing and they weren't doing it. So we felt like we just had to exaggerate things. So, even if your purpose is noble, your credibility is still shot at that point, and nothing you say going forward is going to be taken seriously.
I think part of the problem is, at least in this state, is when he goes out and says some of this stuff, You know, he doesn't worry about credibility because, for the most part, other than Scott and maybe Tom Hauser,
right.
They're all a bunch of sycophants. They just parrot what he says.
Yeah, just go on the Esme Murphy rehab hour.
Yeah.
These press conferences, the conference calls that he held, which were broadcast around the state on television and radio, were a circle of love. And they did not.
They really were.
Yeah, they did not want anybody on the same page to participate. And it was really shocking. I had another point. The question, Drew, you know, when you talk about this, why they're doing it, that's the question I have, though, is why do they do this? Why the lying?
Right.
Why the misrepresentation? I was asking Jeff the same question off air. He had a lawsuit related to a different set of lies. And this one, I asked Kevin Roche yesterday, who's writing about this, on his site, Healthy Skeptic Today, with respect to this pumping up the numbers. He thinks, this made me think of other incidents of the past year. He thinks that, you know, the governor wants to keep up with his peer group in the other states. And I think that's a very charitable interpretation of what Walz is doing. But you think about, you know, how did we end up with the refrigeration facility over in St. Paul that they recently unloaded?
Well, we're getting into a little bit more of this, and I want to get into a bit of the why, because I have my own thoughts on the why. With that, we will also talk about how Governor Walz, second email account, prompts questions from transparency advocates who cannot get access to the information.
Gee, why would he do that?
Where he's talking about official government business from this secondary email address.
News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5. And on iHeartRadio with your smart device. Because you deserve the truth.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, Justice and Drew, along with Sam. We got a round table in studio.
Scott Johnson from Powerline, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. Listener Jeremy tweets using the hashtag TCNT. COVID was released to get Powerline blog off of Ilhan Omar's case.
I'm still on her case.
And it worked.
Good point, though. Good point.
That was clever.
Coming up after our conversation with Representative Tom Emmer at 8 o'clock this morning, Minneapolis DFL chair says city council should refuse to accept the election results. We'll get into we'll get into that after 8 o'clock
should
this morning.
Refuse to accept
the election results. Yes, just refuse them.
The DFL.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
That's exactly. That's exactly.
Alanis Morissette wrote a song about that.
That's right. Scott Johnson, you mentioned a moment ago, you know, why Walz would do this. We were talking about the inflation of the numbers here, right? Governor Walz tried to pump up the COVID numbers, justify shutdown. He wanted to order restrictions on social gatherings, weddings, funerals. The Department of Health data on the origin of COVID infections showed a small number coming from those events, that people wouldn't buy the governor's proposed shutdown. So the Department of Health was encouraged to calculate second and third generation infections on into the future of future generations of transmission to make the numbers look bigger. This has been a theme that we've been talking about on the show, how we could be living in a drastically different world right now if we would embrace actual science and truth. And that's what's so tragic about all of this. They, in my opinion, you know, and I think everybody in the room knows this, they don't want to relinquish the power and control that they have. And going and providing the public with the right information, the right science, the right data, and then leaving it up to the public takes away their ability in their minds to be powerful. Now, I disagree. I absolutely disagree. Right? To me, a good leader and a powerful leader is one that you are going to respect. Right? One that you are going to listen to in times of need and trouble, and that you are going to trust. But
trust. That's the key one.
But for the left, they don't believe that. And think about where we could be right now, even when it comes to our children and vaccinating, right? If we presented all of the relevant data, the infection rates of children, how many children are asymptomatic? How many children actually do get a horrible form of this virus? What other alternatives are available to individuals to go and protect themselves. You know, we have the pill now from Pfizer that they're working on. If you're infected with COVID, you can take this pill, and there's a 90% chance you will not be hospitalized or die because of it. If we actually just gave out the information, the relevant data to the public, and allowed them to go and make a decision, and Walls had done that in the first place, in my opinion, that would have been a leader. That would have been somebody that the right could not push back on. You could not complain about.
No,
right?
Not if they're just being honest.
If they're being honest, and you would, honest and straightforward. And you would trust them.
And they would have credibility, and you would trust them, and everything would work out a lot better. There's no question about it. Absolutely. Honesty, transparency, credibility, those should be some of the key tenets that you look for when you're deciding who you're going to vote for and elect to these powerful offices. Whether, and you know, to me, that's almost secondary to agenda. Not entirely, obviously. I mean, I'm not going to vote for somebody that I vehemently disagree with on every issue just because they're honest. But I think in a lot of ways, those character issues are a lot more important than whether or not you're in ideological alignment with the person that eventually wins. I would rather have an honest, straightforward liberal who is they're in that office for what I believe to be the right reasons because they're there to serve. I would rather have that than some corrupt, you know, person who's pretending to be conservative and just saying all the right things.
I just wanted to add one. It seems to me he loves to exercise power. That's what it's all about. It's got to be some kind of a narcotic. But, you know, in my own experience and asking questions, there was a period until the emergency expired. They were obligated to answer two questions a week from me, and I worked with Kevin in formulating good questions, Kevin O'Shea at Healthy Skeptic, and in formulating questions and that would move the ball forward, things that weren't being covered by the Star Tribune. One of the things they had mentioned in these press conferences was that the Minnesota Department of Health had undertaken a study of the efficacy of masks in Minnesota. And, of course, you know, the mask mandate wasn't a big hit outside the Twin Cities, even less so than it was maybe in the Twin Cities where it was, you know, widely adopted and enforced. But in rural Minnesota where, you know, it transmission by people coming across each other wasn't a big risk. It wasn't a big hit. Well, we asked what happened to the study. What were the results? The only answer we ever got was that it was discontinued. And that was true, you know, on every one of these kind of key points where you would follow up on things that they had raised as what happened to this, whatever happened to that, whatever happened to your phase three projection on COVID cases.
Dials.
Yeah, what happened to the dials?
What happened to the dials?
Well, what happened to the contact tracing?
Yeah, I was going to say, recall how difficult it was to get a hold of the questions they were asking in the contact tracing interviews. When we did the lawsuit against the governor to reopen bars and restaurants earlier this year, you know, I had put in a data request as far back as Thanksgiving asking for information as to how they based their decision on the second shutdown. I got a response in April, 3 months after the case was, we dismissed it because he capitulated and moved his dials back again. But the only reason we were able to go forward with that is we had a plaintiff whose spouse had COVID and went through the contact tracing. So I knew the questions from our client. Because and that was the only asking three questions. Were you in the 14 days prior to onset of symptoms? Were you in a bar or restaurant? Or did you go to a social gathering? Or did you come in contact with somebody who's positive? So when he stood up there in December and said, "We have no information to suggest that going to Home Depot or Walmart or a grocery store causes the spread," he wasn't lying, just because they weren't asking the question. So they didn't have the data. The way he said it, we didn't have data to suggest this because they weren't collecting the data.
Jeff, that raises the question, why again?
Yeah,
you know, it just
you always come back
bizarre.
To that. Don't you?
Yeah,
you always come back. Why do you feel the need to lie? You know, are your motives altruistic? Are you lying with the idea that, you know, it's for the greater good? We're going to get people to behave safely. We're going to save lives, even if we have to fudge the truth. Or are you just lying because you're covering up the earlier lies? You know, is this just a foundation of lies being piled upon one another? It's that's what it is. That's what it looks like.
There's an attitude right now with the party that's in power. That just trust us, we know what we're doing, and stop questioning us.
Yeah.
And if you question us, we'll find ways to punish you.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me, this is a really bad example, but it popped into my head, so I'm going to use it anyway. It sort of reminds me of the difference between how we as parents, not all parents, mind you, right? But when you go back and you look at how how parents had treated their children when they would go out just to go play in the community. And they would just, these are the tools necessary, you know, kids. Don't talk to strangers, right? Look both ways before you go and cross the street, you know, and go out and have fun. And I would disappear I would get on my bike and I would disappear for hours and hours on end, right? And as a young kid. Well, and parents don't do that anymore, right? Parents get overly protective, and that's every parent's right to go and do so. You look at the vaccine mandate as an example. Like a real leader, what should be happening here is have the CDC come out and say, "Hey, look, this is the deal when it comes to COVID right now. You know, if you're vaccinated, you can still possibly get it, but it's going to be a much milder form. Businesses have already adopted a distance work in environment, so." There's nothing to say the CDC can't come out and say, here's our recommendations. We recommend that you still stand 6 feet apart from each other. We recommend that you still use hand sanitizer and make sure you wash your hands and do all those things before. And those companies, and iHeart's done this, they sent out questionnaires to their employees and allow the employees to go and make the decision on their own. If you're comfortable enough to come back to work, and if you want to wear a mask, wear a mask. If you're not comfortable to come back to work yet, you still have this distance. You know, this distance work environment that you can live in. But that's not the way the left operates. And, you know, Biden is acting exactly the same way, where whoever is in charge of Biden is acting exactly the same way that Walz was acting, because they refuse to relinquish any of their power to the personal responsibility of the public. And it's a complete loss of freedom in this country that goes away every single day. They just chip away at it and chip away at it and chip away at it. And we're getting entirely too used to it.
You think they're cognizant? You think they're aware of how much damage they've done to people's psyches, to people's mental health?
I don't know if they care.
I don't either. There's a story that I think we have it. I don't remember if we threw it in the prep or not. But there was a story about this Atlantic writer who wrote this long harrowing tale of a trip he made to a wedding and how scared he was and how scared his wife was and how many precautions they took, and it didn't matter because they were still very afraid. And then, God forbid, one of them did contract COVID and it was a mild head cold for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this guy got mocked all over for, you know, the tone of his story. But I read it and I just feel sorry for that guy. I feel sorry for the people that are still living their life that way, just afraid of their fellow human beings, afraid to go out and experience life and enjoy life because you might walk within 6 feet of somebody who's carrying some of the COVID virus and you might get a head cold for a few days and you might feel run down. I was like, I feel just pitiful. I mean, it's sad what they've done to so many people with this constant barrage of fear porn.
Life has returned to normal if you're a Vikings fan. I guess you can go to a sold out stadium and root for the Vikings. But if you want to cover the Potter trial across the street the stadium, they're letting two journalists in, and you know, a limited audience.
It is
bizarre.
You want to go watch the Gophers, you know, play a football game. You want to go watch some Gopher hockey. You can get, you know, shoulder to shoulder with 10,000 other people and scream your head off. You want to cover the Potter trial. Sorry. It's not safe.
From what I've seen, the virus also avoids DFL fundraisers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And high profile rich weddings.
And birthday parties of former presidents.
Yeah.
Questions about transparency abound after it was revealed that Minnesota Governor Tim Walz has a second email address that may shield him from public records requests. Records requests that were submitted by Senate Republicans, NPR, and nonprofits like Public Record Media have not resulted in the publication of any email to or from the governor's newly discovered account, tim.mankato@state.mn.us. Walz's office, however, has denied that the use of this second email address shields him from transparency measures. His office told the Minnesota Reformer that his primary email address, tim.walz@state.mn.us, is not used for official business, and that messages sent to that account will receive an automated reply. Alpha News reached out to this account and received no reply, automated or otherwise. The governor has one state email address. It is secure. And we have always searched that account in response to the data request for email to and from the governor. This is in accordance to the public records law. We have shared tens of thousands of pages of communications from our office. This comes from a spokesperson to local media, apparently referencing the second Mankato account. In August, NPR revealed that it couldn't obtain a single email from the governor after the outlet made a request. The documents provided to NPR News contain few examples of Walz weighing in himself, and then only through the assessments of key aides recalling conversations with him. Despite a request for any emails or text messages or other communication directly sent to the governor, none were released. Emails from Walz were notably absent in a large trove of documents published by Senate Republicans last year relating to the governor's ban on youth sports. This data request produced emails between top state officials, between the DOH, Jan Malcolm, and the governor's chief of staff. Walz's emails are also missing from a joint report based on data requests submitted by the Senate Transportation and Judiciary Public Safety Committees. State Representative Mary Franson reports that she had no luck obtaining a single email from the governor as part of a data request, and I've done many, she told Alpha News. As of right now, there is no publicly available verification that the governor spokesperson says is true and that the correspondence between Walz and the second email address have made available via data requests. That's according to the executive director of Public Record Media. PRM did learn the governor's email address months ago from a whistleblower who requested the data, but they have not heard back. But followed up with a request last week, and the state now says it will get back to them in 2 to 4 weeks with that request.
Maybe. Hopefully. Maybe. Probably. Hopefully they'll just forget about it.
So much transparency.
And go away. So there's not many reasons for the governor to have a secondary email address that he's using to conduct business on. I can think of one, really, just to avoid data practices requests, avoid, you know, being found out about it. Is there any other reason that you can think of?
Is that what he runs his Amazon account through?
It's where it says Disney Plus subscription.
There you go.
Meanwhile, Doug Seaton of the Upper Midwest Law Center, if you can guess from the show, said a legal challenge may be in order. Seaton told Alpha News that he is suspicious, explaining that the governor's second account may represent an effort to dodge requirements of the Data Practices Act.
Duh.
Has the Star Tribune run a story either on the secret email account or on the pumped up numbers yet?
Yeah, that'd be a no.
Not yet.
That'd be a no.
They're apparently going to get their ducks in a row before the Star Tribune runs.
You got to wait till the Esme Murphy rehab hour on Sunday to get the right talking points in order.
Some have pointed out it does make sense for the governor to use an email address that doesn't follow the state standard first name last name formula, since that account likely sees an unworkable number of emails. Okay. Seaton said, it's all the emails from the children that are thanking him for all the good work he's done.
Of course.
Seaton said that while this is logical, it doesn't mean that the second email account can be excluded from the application of the Data Practices Act. And he's absolutely right. Coming up, we are going to be talking to Representative Tom Emmer.
Yep, we'll get his thoughts on the infrastructure bill. Wanted to get his thoughts on Buttigieg's comments from earlier in the week about the racist bridges and racist highways and a few other items as well.
Got a couple of things we need to get into before the news quiz, too. It includes these comments from the Minnesota DFL chair that says the city council should refuse to accept the election results. And we'll talk a little bit about the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. Want to get some thoughts from our lawyers in studio. And the judge made a joke yesterday. We have the audio that the media intentionally misinterpreted and decided to basically complain about him and how unwoke he is.